So last episode we watched Forbidden Planet, just a old 1950s sci-fi film, because there's that video James Rolfe did about his favorite classic era sci-fi films, and I thought that one seemed interesting. So the other one that stood out to me is The Blob with Steve McQueen, because Forbidden Planet was quite a serious, hard sci-fi type film, you know, with well, it had Leslie Nielsen in it, but back then, Leslie Nielsen, you know, that meant seriousness, not jokes. Where The Blob, I feel like, is probably more to the B movie side of things, I gotta presume. But it just also sounded interesting. And it's one of those things that, like, I know the name Steve McQueen. He was extremely famous, but I've never seen a Steve McQueen movie.
Oh my God, you have not?
I don't think so. I looked up the list of stuff he was in, and I think they've all managed to dodge me. It's like a lot of famous movies, but I don't think I've seen any of them.
Okay.
So what better place to start than apparently this was actually his first starring role. So start at the beginning, I guess. But do you know anything about the 1958 version of The Blob?
I've got to admit that I have never seen it.
So just the basics I looked up of it, it does seem like I've seen movies like this a lot. You know, even from this era, there's like movies that fell into the public domain. And I remember when DVD first became a thing, you could get these movies at like gas stations and stuff for literally $2. You could just buy a weird old movie. So I've seen lots of movies like this. You know, I'm thinking like Night Fright comes to mind, like these low budget, just bad movies where monster comes to town, and you know, the cops don't believe the kids, and it's like, why don't you listen to us? And it's because you're no good teenagers, kind of like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You know, it's a trope or whatever. But I kind of figured like this trope must have come from somewhere. It must have come from somewhat of a more reputable film, and maybe The Blob is it.
That was what was so great about growing up in this area when I was a kid. There was the Gaiety Theater, which had the more, the Oscar type films at it, and then there was the Capitol, and the Capitol always had stuff like this: the B grade movies, the Christopher Lees and the Frankenstein movies, all the B movies. You always knew you could always see a good piece of crap at the Capitol.
And yet, the little bit I looked up of this movie, it actually was quite negatively reviewed at the time. So that's a bit of a bad sign, but it's like a cult favorite now. And how I was saying that, you know, I was saying Forbidden Planet was like kind of hard sci-fi, but this might be a little bit like hard sci-fi is what they call science fiction that is like plausible, you know, that the science behind it might be real. But maybe The Blob is a little bit that way too, because apparently astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson said that of all the Hollywood aliens, which are usually disappointing, The Blob was his favorite from a scientific perspective. And this ethnobiologist talked about it and stuff. You know, that basically there's The Blob's not a crazy idea. Apparently, this blob thing could possibly be real. So that's interesting. But one thing I guess we should be on the lookout for is we did find Forbidden Planet quite talky, and the reviews at the time of The Blob said the same thing. Where, I mean, I guess in this case, it's quite a low budget movie, much lower budget than Forbidden Planet. And I guess if you have a low budget movie where the expensive part is the special effects of The Blob, what better way to stretch that budget than to have a lot of yap yap yapping? So we should be ready for that. There might be a lot of talking.
The whole thing about them too, though, is a lot of these movies, they just can't presume that the viewer is going to suspend reality right from the beginning. I mean, obviously, if you're going to see a movie like The Blob, you're going to suspend reality right from the beginning. But they feel they've got to give you the scientific explanation as to how this thing really could happen or could be. And yeah, that's why they have to do the yak, yak, yak. That's what it was like in Urban Planet. I mean, Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, and the other thing I suspect will eat up quite a bit of dialogue time is, you know, it's just the authority figures not believing in the crisis, which is, you know, understandable on one hand because it's going to be a blob, it's going to be some crazy thing, killer clowns, the stuff, whatever. Like, of course you wouldn't believe in these things, but you know, I know it's like frustrating. It's why one of my favorite moments ever in genre TV. was there's an episode of Buffy where that guy Oz that Seth Green played, his cousin was acting crazy and weird. So they're like, all right, we got to sit down. This is going to be a lot to accept. But werewolves and vampires and mummies and all that stuff, they're all real. And instead of arguing about it, he just goes, oh, actually, that explains a lot. I was like, man, that's nice that for once somebody just accepts it.
Yeah, he just said it. Yeah. But the other thing about a lot of these horror movies that were so popular in the 1950s, they were kind of like a statement on humanity. Like you had blobs and creatures from outer space and creatures from the Black Lagoon, those kind of things. And they were kind of like a statement on the good and evil in the world, especially after the nuclear bombs were set off at the end of World War II. And then everybody, there was the nuclear arms race. It was like, what changes could the nuclear world bring to humanity? It could warp things and change things into weird creatures. And it was not just a story of a creature coming out and attacking humanity. It was the evil in humanity versus the good in humanity. So they kind of always had to have those big yak yak sessions to kind of draw you into that other meaning that was behind these things.
Although now that you mention that reminds me too, a thing that was on the wiki article for this is kind of a refuting of that type of idea a little bit, where obviously a lot of these movies are about these types of things. Like I think particularly of like the Pod People came out around the time of the Red Scare, and it's like, oh yeah, I can see that connection. But apparently some film, fancy film guy, he tried to say the same thing about the Blob, of like, oh, the Blob is clearly about the fear of communism taking over the West. It's like a blob that takes you over. And then the people who made the Blob were like, nah, no, wasn't about that. It was called the Molten Meteor. Then we changed the name to the Glob. Then we changed the name to the Blob. It was a co-feature at the drive-in with I Married a Monster from Outer Space. It was just about a blob, dude. So this one is not about anything deeper.
This one wasn't a Children of the Dam type thing.
Right. Because I do believe that with these other movies, or even like, zombie movies and all that stuff. Like, yeah, you can make these parallels to societal issues, but not with the blob. So we shouldn't be looking for that. Because if it happened, it was by accident.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
But that is funny, even just for it's sort of a similar situation of just like cutting through everything where the actual filmmakers were like, nah, nope, sorry. Not about that.
So, shall we sign in?
Yeah, let's begin my Steve McQueen education with the first starring role for Steve McQueen. Oh yeah, and I mean it's fine because he went on to have obviously an enormous career, but apparently with this movie he had two options. He could either just take his payment up front that was relatively small, or he could have gotten a percentage of the ticket sales. But he was a brand new actor. He just needed to pay rent. He's like, this movie's not going to make any money. Just pay me now. And then this movie became a huge hit and made $4 million. So he's like, ah, whoops. But in the end, it was fine. But that's kind of because, yeah, I can understand why you wouldn't expect the Blob to make you a lot of residuals. But it would have.
All righty, here we go.
I think I saw the doc. He was standing by the window, and he was. Well, he was trying to get out, and that thing was all over him, and then he just dissolved while I stood there. I think I saw this.
I believe you did.
You know, plenty of people, in their right minds, thought they saw things that didn't exist. You know, like flying saucers. The light was just right, and the angle, and the imagination. Oh boy, if that's what it is, then this is just an ordinary night. You and I are going to go home and go to sleep, and tomorrow when we get up, that sun's going to shine, just like yesterday. Good old yesterday.
Steve.
See, I always have to mention about the short credits. This one didn't even have credits, like nothing. It just said the end at the end. It's so weird being able to see now with watching things digitally, just seeing on the clock. Because from the point that they figured out that fire extinguishers and the cold is how you fight the blob, it was only 4 minutes till the end of the movie. It's like, wow.
Oh, really? Was it?
Yeah, so fast. And again, no credits or anything, like 4 minutes until this movie is over. But yeah, that really wasn't bad because I have seen so many movies like that I did have to kind of, get that out of my brain of like, yeah, okay, once we're in the middle part where they're just arguing with the cops and whatever, it's like, okay, I've seen this a million times, but that's not the blob's fault. That's, it's just that it's a common trope. But as far as this type of movie goes, like I was pretty impressed with the special effects. The blob was cool. It looked really good.
Yeah, and they did little things like when they showed it kind of trying to get through the vent at the movie theater, when they showed it in the freezer room and it kind of slid under the door and then it backed up. You had no idea why, like why didn't it come all the way through? And then outside the little restaurant there, the little trailer type restaurant, you could see it outside the windows. All of a sudden it just kind of covered the windows. Yeah, little. There were little things like that that were different rather than having it roll all around town and suck people up and down. They didn't do a whole lot of that. That was all behind the scenes. And you really don't need to see all that, it overpowering people and sucking up. You get the image, and that's all you need in your mind. Your mind is imagining all that stuff as opposed to actually physically seeing it.
And yeah, the basic mechanics of it, like how that Neil deGrasse Tyson guy was saying how he was very fascinated by the blob as a horror villain, because it is neat. Just, yeah, it starts so small, just this little tiny ball that crashes to the earth in a little meteor. And then it's on the guy's hand, and then it's on the doctor's head, and then it eats a movie theater, and then it's taken over a diner. And even that, it's neat that idea at the end that they've taken it to the Arctic and it's frozen for now, but someday. Like, the place my mind goes is it'll be fine probably till the human race is extinguished. We'll be dead and gone, but someday the earth's gonna get warm and this freaking blob is gonna come back to life. Like, it's just the earth plus blob now.
And here we are. Here we are in 2026. Global warming.
Yeah.
Is the blob still up there? Or I figured sequel, it would be something like, I mean, they left it wide open for a sequel. Get some humanity up there in the Arctic doing some kind of exploration or whatever, and somebody discovers it. And bomb, out she comes again.
Yeah, it actually kind of ties in with The Thing. That's how The Thing starts, is they're in Antarctica and they find an alien creature, but it doesn't behave like the blob. It's like more advanced, but they kind of could tie together. They did a thing too where, yeah, they really were on the nose about the sequel, where the words "the end" then formed into a question mark, which I assume was probably kind of like clever in the 50s. Like, oh, what who had that idea? That's funny. But now, nowadays, you can't do that. That would be really corny. But back then, it was okay.
Well, and the other thing that they did not do, which most of these horror movies do, is they come up with some scientific explanation as to what this thing is, where it came from. We never get any of that in this. I mean, we know that it came in on a shooting star, but there was no explanation as to what it was. It was just that here's this thing. We can't kill it. All we can do is put it in hiatus in a freeze frozen state. And that's it. There was no big explanation as to what it was, how it came, all that. No, didn't get any of that at all, which was okay. Because when you're watching these kind of movies, really, you just want to watch it for the thing trying to take over. You really don't care about the explanation as to how it came about.
Yeah, it was nice that it let a person just infer. You just can kind of come up on your own with how this is working. Or like how I was saying to you, how I just think of blobs from Futurama cartoons or whatever. Blobs are supposed to be green. I thought this blob was going to be green, but this one was red. But you mentioned like, yeah, it's probably only red though because it's been eating people. And it's like, oh yeah, if this was a vegetarian blob, It probably would be green. Like, it's just neat that it gives you enough information to be able to connect these dots yourself. But yeah, it doesn't have Dr. Science doesn't show up and explain the whole thing.
Yeah. Doesn't have to throw an explanation down your throat. And also, when you say you thought it would be green instead of red, when it actually came out of the little chrysalis or the little ball at the beginning, it didn't have any color. It was kind of like a big little gob of snot as it was going down the man's arm. And then it turned red. You saw it turning red when he was laying on the gurney in the doctor's office. So obviously it was absorbing blood. And the more people that it absorbed, the darker it got, because it was quite a dark red at the begin at the end there. But it did look like a piece of toffee. Taffy apple looked like a bunch of taffy that was colored red, just like you'd put on an apple.
Yeah, I'm kind of impressed, I guess, that they had the restraint just to call it the blob, because I feel like I would have called it "Beware the Blood Blob." I would have called it a much stupider thing. Speaking of that, though, the other movies I've seen in this vein, I mean, there's Killer Clowns, where I kept saying, like, man, all this stuff with the cops was just like Officer Mooney in Killer Clowns, like so much so that clearly Killer Clowns is an homage to this movie. But Killer Clowns is a different scenario because it's from later on, and it's like a comedy. But I have seen movies from this era where the special effects are so much worse. Like in Night Fright, it's just a monster crashes. The teens try to convince the cops. No one listens. But the monster's just like a guy in like a gorilla costume, basically, is terrible. And there was this other one. I think it was called Teenagers from Outer Space. But they would like zap people with a laser, and they just would cut the shot and replace it with a plastic skeleton, from like a doctor's office. And it's just like, that's the worst. Or I saw one where they held up a lobster in front of the camera to try to make the lobster look really big. Like these movies I've seen are just all like, they're just dog shit. They're terrible. So yeah, the Blob was much, much better than all that stuff.
And as I was watching the blob, the monster, the blob, I'm wondering, like, was it taffy that they made? How did they make it move? Because in these days, this was not any computer generation that did this. So they had to manually do that thing. So that's kind of fascinating to me about somebody actually has to create the thing and make it move. Did they make a bunch of taffy? And then did they, I could see them making it move so that it would go under a door and then back up the film so it would go be out. Okay, I get that. But there were certain times when it actually had shape, like it would rise up a little bit. I wonder how they did that.
Yeah, the things that kind of cross my mind, but I don't know enough about special effects to really know how this works. But there's like on some of those big shots, like the shots of the diner, it seemed like it was like a matte painting. Like they did that in Star Wars a lot, where they would just like have a painting. Or in Forbidden Planet, they did it for the planet background. So they just basically paint a big background. And it did look like they did that a bit. And there were little bits of stop motion. But I also appreciated that they didn't do that very much, because stop motion is one of those things that never really looks good. It's neat, it's kind of cool, old Ray Harryhausen, fighting skeletons and stuff, but it never looks real. But they didn't use it very much here. It mostly was like this goopy, flowing blob stuff that, yeah, looked pretty good. So yeah, I wouldn't say that's a, not a movie that's going to change your life or anything, but I'm glad I watched it. It was all right. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was very entertaining.